Do you think any part of Jerry Jones was like, not good, but I also don't have to pay him now?
I think all.
I think all of Jerry Jones thought of that. Yeah.
I think Jerry started thinking, Trevor Lawrence is going to be available.
Yeah. Or I wish I had gotten Brady in the offseason. What do you guys think would be would cause a more painful look on your face? Is it a bone going through the skin and you're fracturing your ankle, or watching $100 million being flushed down the toilet? How about that?
That's tough.
I know.
Imagine. That's $100 million.
I think so. I'd cry.
Welcome. Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of this.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
Stugatz, did you watch Saturday Night Live, or did you consume Saturday Night Live the way many people do now, the day after, the way they watch late night television? Did you see anything from Saturday Night Live?
No, man. Listen, it was such a busy weekend with sports, I forgot the ALCS started last night.
Okay. This is something.
It did?
Yes.
Yes, the Rays beat the Astros.
No way. No, you're trying to trick me, right? No. I thought they were taking the weekend off.
No, for real? They played, yes, last night. I forgot.
Yes, the Rays beat the Astros 2-1. Why don't you yell at your television that they haven't talked about that on Get Up? Why don't you rail on behalf of Tampa Rays baseball?
All right, you'll be happy to know that Get Up has moved on from the Dak Prescott injury. We are now to the Kansas City Chiefs' home loss to the Las Vegas Raiders.
Well, we got in here. We were just talking during the break about the Dak Prescott injury, and you guys go ahead and just share with the audience, because it was an interesting conversation you were having about Dak Prescott and why it was funny and heartless the way that it was off air. Let's see if we could clean it up slightly on air, but why Dak Prescott was crying.
We just said it's so devastating. Our thoughts and prayers are with Dak and his family at this time. Hopefully he's able to have a full recovery like Alex Smith, and we wished him the best.
Right. There was no mention of what the impact was on your fantasy team, or the phrase that Stugatz keeps using, which is $100 million flushed down the toilet.
Well, I believe that's the reason. I'm not going to mince my words here. I'm certain the injury hurt, but I think the real reason you saw those crocodile tears on Dak Prescott, I mean, just streaming down his face, is because that's the look you have when someone flushes $100 million of yours right down the toilet. I'm sorry. I mean,
you're
I'm not sorry.
You had a second chance and you made it worse than what you said off air. How did that happen?
I don't know.
I need to apply context, unfortunately, to the crocodile tears.
Why?
Only because we don't want this to
become
something.
Because the actual meaning of it.
We don't want you to be accusing Dak of fake tears in a way
that
might create a headline for you that you don't need. Unless you want it. I'm here. I think Mike doesn't want it.
No, I am good. I don't want anything. I just want to give my opinion.
For the record, Scott just has no idea what crocodile tears actually mean. So he thinks tears are crocodile tears.
In his defense, crocodiles are real. So those should be real tears. You'd think maybe like ghost tears or something like along these lines. Like, right. I get you, Stugatz. I know where you're at.
Thank you.
But the reason they're called crocodile tears is because crocodiles are not capable of that kind of emotion.
So, prove it.
Really?
Prove it?
How does anyone know?
Boom. I mean, seriously. There it is. You guys got me with prove it and then boom. But it was a very small explosion. Billy.
I mean, flush $100 million down the toilet and see how the crocodile reacts.
I'm not embarrassed to what I said during the break. When he was on that cart in tears, the very first thought I had was, oh, shit, my fantasy team. I mean, that's just the natural thought. Now I feel bad for him. It's a terrible industry. I hope he recovers. I hope he gets the money he deserves. But my first thought was he's my quarterback on my fantasy team, and he's been amazing this year. What am I going to do?
Greg Cody's son, ladies and gentlemen, the rotten apple does not fall far from the selfish tree. Oh, I'm not the only one. Get
out
of here.
All you Dak Prescott owners out there, you thought the same thing. I don't care what anybody says. Fantasy I'll say owner. It out loud.
I don't know if you guys were watching live when it happened, but after it happened, did anyone else hear Romo's phone buzzing? Because that's what I heard. And I was like, what's going on right now? And then they showed Jerry and he seemed to be on his phone and Romo wasn't picking up.
Yeah. Do you guys think Jerry secretly, like, where do you think Jerry was when that whole thing was going down emotionally? What
wow,
do you think?
Wait a minute. You really pivoted there. You did secretly. And then you said, where do you did secretly. And then you pivoted over to where do you think he was emotionally?
Well, I'm just wondering.
I'm more curious about where you were headed with secretly.
Well, I mean, this is team guy who did the team thing by not pressing him on a long-term deal when Zeke Elliott and others were getting long-term deals. And I'm wondering,
when a holdout would have been an amazing team-destroying thing that would have gotten him his money. If he had threatened to hold out and they had gone into the season with Andy Dalton and the season had started this way.
Right. Yeah. So I'm just wondering, like, is there a part of Jerry that kind of, like, you know, he's a businessman, he's competitive, like, hey, I won this round? Or
well, I'm not sure what you guys are doing. Help me understand, because
we're being assholes.
Well, that I have no confusion about whatsoever. But the Dak Prescott injury, why are you guys making it something? And I know it was gruesome. I'm not saying it wasn't, but why are you making it career threatening? It's a broken ankle. Like, guys break their ankles, and it was awful.
I don't know the recovery time on it.
Guys though. Like Sugats of his age grew up in a time where a compound fracture, it was very hard to recover from that. The science wasn't fully there. That would be a career ender. Guys like Alex Smith and Mackenzie Milton somehow coming back from those injuries, it just wasn't in the realm of the possibility in the 1990s.
I'm just so accustomed to the Theismann hit and that being a career ender. But you're right. I mean, Alex Smith just came back yesterday.
No, but here's the thing, though. I'm asking you guys because I haven't seen the reporting on this. I'm asking you guys where you're getting career ending from, because Alex Smith came back yesterday, but he threw for 36 yards. Like,
yeah, so it was like he never left.
I mean, yeah, he couldn't do much of anything other than emotionally check down.
Right there.
No, and get sacked. Right where he got sacked a ton as well. But I guess what I was asking you is, are the reports that this is now actually going to cost him money because he's never going to be the same player again?
Well, think about his game and think about... Look, do you remember in Nike Town at Sunset Place, guys? Do you remember what Dan Marino's shoe looked like when they had it on display? How it was basically a thigh-high Julia Roberts pretty woman boot? This is what happens when you got an ankle fracture in the 1990s. Like, and that was Dan Marino. Now, Dak Prescott and sports medicine and athletes today are totally different. But his game, it's not predicated on his mobility, but it certainly helps. He can be a pocket passer, no doubt. But you got to think that kind of injury is going to have some sort of lasting effect. Even if it's by degrees, he's not going to be the same quarterback.
They're comparing that injury to Alex Smith's and to Gordon Hayward's. I mean, that's the comparison.
Yeah, and Alex Smith, obviously, no one expects him to be what he once was. But Gordon Hayward, very clearly, not the same type of player he was before that injury. It's just hard to believe we're going to see the same explosive Dak Prescott that was arguably, even though their team had one win entering yesterday,
okay,
an MVP candidate.
So forgive me, because I missed this portion of it, and this better sort of explains to me why it is that GetUp went with 30 minutes of coverage, because you were saying America's team and America's quarterback, and no, the emotion of all the things you guys are talking about there is a strong story that any human can understand, humanizing these superheroes who can do things that we can't do. And so if what you're telling me is we just witnessed what we thought was the Willis McGahee injury.
Right.
Now, Willis McGahee had a fine career in the NFL. May not have actually been ever again what he was in college, but had a fine career coming off a gruesome injury.
No, this is a gruesome injury. This was an injury where they re-showed it, Dan, and they were like, hey, we're showing you the good version of it, and the good version was terrible.
No, Stugatz, forgive me. I saw it in real time. I saw the original, not slow motion, the first shot that showed his ankle was way out of place, and then I heard Tony Romo go, oh no, when he realized that his foot was going in the wrong direction. I think that the $100 million you're talking about is that anyone can understand gambling on yourself for a year and then having the thing happen to you, anyone can understand how much that hurts. And then it becomes, instead of a funny conversation about why is Dak Prescott crying as he leaves the field, it becomes an actual worthy conversation. Is it the emotion of him knowing that he just cost himself a whole lot of money? And he knows, because he knows his body, that he's never going to be the same and his prime is over. Like, I did not realize when I saw the injury, I thought it was gruesome, but I didn't think that it was something that people were talking about as possibly career ending, because I don't think of hardly any injury in that sport except for paralysis being that.
Before Romo saw the replay, he thought it was a cramp.
Yeah, he missed that. He missed that.
Oh, so maybe Romo. Maybe Romo was saying, "Oh yeah, no," yeah, because he got it so very wrong.
Well, I'm not used to Tony Romo being that wrong. I mean, just think about the play that he got injured in. It's an athleticism that is like ho hum now, right? But we don't see that from quarterbacks before this new modern era. And a guy that's definitely going to have some sort of metal in his foot right now, an ankle, perhaps permanently. It's just not a run that I can see him making after a compound fracture.
Do we know if all of these announcers at all of these games are at the games? Because Greg Gumbel made a couple of mistakes yesterday, Stugatz, that I don't understand how he made them. And it made me wonder, are these guys doing this differently than they usually do? Like, Boog is calling all the games out of a studio. He's not there. A lot of people are disguising whether or not they're at the games or not. Greg Gumbel was calling Lamar Jackson Murray all game, and he called something that was clearly an interception, a catch for the other team. And I was like, is he there? Does he not have the sight lines? Because I assumed that he must not have been there.
Was it Lamar Murray or Murray Jackson? What was he calling him?
He was I don't know.
I didn't know that being at the game would have changed that, though, right?
Yeah,
calling someone the wrong name.
I mean, but Murray Jackson's an entirely different
one. First of all, yes, no, I can't make fun of anybody for getting a name wrong, but Lamar Jackson calling him Murray all game, the MVP of the league.
That wasn't LaMurray?
I thought it was just Murray, one word, like share. Like, just there. And I'm like, wow, Murrays don't usually move like that.
Murray!
I've been wondering where that was. Do we know, though? What
Murray Jacks.
What is funnier?
Murray Jackson.
Murray Jackson is funnier than Lamar Murray. Yeah. His first name,
I don't
Murray.
Think there's a Murray on this roster sheet, Greg. I'm really struggling to figure out what's happening here.
Can someone help me?
Was Gumbel at the game?
Whether the announcers are all there or not.
I'm just beholden to what I'm seeing on the red zone and the second TV on mute. And I see a lot of the announcers very clearly in the broadcast booth. I don't recall seeing Greg Gumbel out there. Were you guys watching the Scott Hansen red zone when the injury happened? He approached it as if a president had been assassinated during his evening news shift. The weight of the moment. He was overcome by emotion, and I felt like, well, this is, I mean, I hope he's okay, but this feels a little extreme.
And what was it? It's just, can we get into the what of the emotion clearly hit a nerve?
I mean, we saw it, the daytime programming for sports fans during a pandemic was built on the founding principle of Dak Prescott's contract. This was the only talking point. Dak Prescott ascended to superstar status because we had nothing else to discuss in sports. He is the quarterback of America's team. Contract. Does he deserve to be paid more than Carson Wentz? Does he deserve to be paid? Look, what? He's asking for what? This was a talking point for months, and even though their record wasn't very good, he was playing at a level that, oh, he banked on himself. And for it to all come crashing down like that, you can understand why we're still talking about it on Get Up. Still 51 minutes now into Get Up, no mention of LeBron James's title.
Gumbel apologized. I didn't realize this was such a big story. Gumbel has apologized. I don't know if he and Rich Gannon were at the game, but he has apologized. Gannon at one point said, listen, they have similar playing styles. Gumbel responded, that's not going to save me.
No, this is the extent. He was confusing
Kyler
him.
Murray.
Kyler Murray is what he was doing. Yes. He was calling Lamar Jackson Murray, Kyler Murray, and he has apologized for that.
I think the thing to think about with Scott Hansen after the Dak injury was that earlier in the day he was so emotional with the Alex Smith injury that he saw this and was like, oh my God, I can't believe it happened again. Because I was watching, like I was standing 6 inches away from the TV like to see actually what happened to Dak. And it did sound like you know, JFK got shot and he was just there and there was silence. And we were like, oh my God, what just happened?
Now I'm wondering if Spo was crying because of the Dak injury.
Tony, hold on a second. Did you just say you got 6 inches from your television? Like what? Like a surgeon? Like what do you like? What?
I was really trying to get in there, Dan, and see what exactly had happened. I didn't really know. Was it the ankle? Was it the leg that snapped? I needed to
so
get.
So you got real close to your television.
I love how Alex Smith gets in and it's this emotional moment. And then he just gets swarmed on like the first 8 plays. Aaron Donald is on him like a backpack at one point.
Yes. Oh, he didn't care.
The backpack from hell.
Well, I actually thought watching that coverage that Alex Smith was fortunate that his wife was wearing a mask because I thought she was horrified. Like I thought the rest of her facial expressions, instead of an emotional moment, it looked like, oh my God, what has my husband, what cage full of sharks has my husband decided to give his life to again?
The Aaron Donald backpack play, that came before the most needless instant replay in NFL history, right? Did you see the play that they reviewed? It was a 0-yard completion. No gain. It would have been the same result if they called it incomplete. Yet here we are for 8 minutes because I guess we want Alex Smith to be 2 for 2.
Was it overruled? I mean,
ruling on the field stood. Congratulations. Same result no matter what.
The Gumbel interception call was really bad, though, Dan, to your point. Murray. It was like, and there's another reception. And it's clearly a linebacker with the ball. I'm like, what?
There's no way we're getting that cleared, right? There's no way.
No, that's disseminating without the express written consent of the NFL. That Brad Venables is good.
We haven't talked Canes, Clemson. I mean, what are we talking about?
Holy shit.
I'm just saying we haven't talked about anything.
I mean, they just swarmed. So I have an answer to your question leading up to the game. It appears our defensive line is still kind of good. We didn't do our proper pregame because one thing of note in that Virginia game where I'm like, I think De'Ara King's going to have some time here. Clemson was missing their best defensive lineman. But Brett Venables was super aggressive on defense, and he realized that Miami has the worst wide receiving core that they've had since the sanction days of the 90s.
It's pretty bad, Stugatz. What you couldn't help but notice during that UM-Clemson game is De'Eriq King belonged on the field with those players, but those wide receivers did not belong on the field with those defensive backs. Like, whatever Clemson's got going on in the secondary is a lot closer to professional than what Miami has going on at wide receiver. Because even when De'Eriq King did have time, he was throwing to guys that the times that he got picked, I felt like it's simply because he's throwing to a guy who's got half a step, but that's his best option because nobody's got half a step.
It was 42-17, and it was uglier than that. This was honestly uglier than the ACC championship game. The only play that Miami had was De'Eriq just run, which is a shame because
besides the special teams,
Clemson stacked the box and was absolutely daring Miami's wide receivers to beat them. And this is just a terrible wide receiver room right now. No plays to take advantage of Clemson's aggressiveness. We didn't see Knighton until like the third quarter. You would think like maybe a little dump off to keep those linebackers honest, because it wasn't just the overwhelming defensive line that dominated Miami's offensive line, which had been pretty good entering that game. They would blitz like every damn play. Venables didn't give a bleep, and he was daring Miami to make an adjustment, and they just weren't capable. Overwhelmed.
Did you feel at halftime, though, because you were thoroughly outplayed, and then you got that special, magical, special teams block field goal for a touchdown, and you're like, wow, we got outplayed, but it's only 21-10.
Their kicker almost chased down Ivy.
Yeah.
No, I know, but I'm just wondering.
Their kicker almost chased down, like, there was a substantive speed difference between those two teams.
I understand.
Had a running start, too.
But I'm always interested in this because I don't care about either team, so I'm wondering, as a fan, did did you convince yourself at halftime, like, we got a shot here?
The only
21-10, Mike.
The only time I could, I was like, wow, that's a great play. But considering that we gave Manny Diaz and this staff a week to prepare for this game, I wasn't really sure what he was going to do for the next 15 minutes. I was just trying to figure out, can I win plus 14 and a half? And can I get my live in-game of plus 23, which I was so close to, Al Blades. Thank you.
Those penalties early on, I know it ended up being a blowout.
Oh, they
so
were super
really
sloppy,
matter.
Though. No, they were sloppy all game, though. They were undisciplined.
But that first series where they got the stop, where they almost had an interception, and then the foot was just a little lined up off. Like, from there on, it was just like, okay, you're done.
Amari Carter does this every game. He gets targeting every game. And the word out of camp is he's like a brilliant player. Like, he understands the games and ways, and yet he always does the dumbest thing. They couldn't afford to lose another safety, given that Gervin Hall was suspended for that first half. They put in a true freshman who's not one of these highly recruited, highly touted prospects, and they attacked him immediately. Miami couldn't get out of their own way. When they actually got Clemson in third and long, they did pretty well. I know this sounds ridiculous, but in college football against Clemson, 42 points... it's manageable if your offense gives your defense something, because if your offense gives your team something, then your defense isn't out there as long. That is a manageable game if the offense does anything, but 10 rushes by the running backs for 11 yards. They just had nothing outside of De'Eriq King scrambling.
And Clemson, incidentally, Stugatz, everything Mike is saying is so. It was an overwhelming physical domination where you could see the differences, the discrepancies in talent level. You could see them running around out there. And one of the places you could see it is just how Clemson does all these clusters of moving their athletes around, keeping the ball near the line of scrimmage, and they could break any one of those things when Trevor Lawrence isn't actually, like, he will throw it downfield if they have to go on third and 14, but they do. There were so many screen passes that Miami couldn't do anything about.
They had so much space. I was so jealous of their playmakers being in space when we had no space. The plays were nuked. De'Eriq King gets a ball out in less than 2.5 seconds, and he had a half second. It was insane how it looked like a bomb went off at that offensive line every time. They would just send three linebackers at times, and you're like, oh, my God, this is just over. It felt like playing the Lakers trying to get an offensive rebound. It's just this is a weight class above.
I mean, they're Alabama. That's who they are. That's what they become. Maybe better than Alabama, right?
The same kinds of athletes. Yeah. I mean, Dabo recruits all the same sorts of people, and they are, they're an overwhelming – physical menace where they also have the better quarterback every time they're stepping on the field. Like, did you see what Alabama did this weekend to Lane Kiffin's Mississippi team? I saw a good stat here.
It was a great game.
It was a great game.
Really, the game of the weekend.
Anyone else have that over 69? Easy, third quarter.
Nice.
All right, but I want to read to you this stat from Roger Sherman. This is, it's worthy of stat of the day, Mike. Can you get me the stat of the day music? I just need the short one here.
Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day. Stat of the day. It is the stat of the day.
We are now over 1 hour that GetUp has not talked about the NBA Finals and has just largely covered the Dak Prescott injury. And even though we're more than an hour in, just now, while the Stat of the Day music was playing, Stugatz pointed at the screen for some reason at Dak Prescott being carted off in tears when it's the millionth time it's been on the screen this morning. But here is the stat. The Ole Miss defense of Lane Kiffin prevented 41 yards of total offense. What that means is, Stugatz, okay?
Yeah.
Because I don't think any of us have ever heard that stat. Prevented 41 yards of total offense.
Mm-hmm.
It means that Alabama had 11 drives. 9 of them ended in touchdowns. 1 was a fumble at the 1. The other one was a punt from the 40-yard line. So Mississippi gave up all but the 41 yards it could have given up if they hadn't been on the field while Alabama was playing.
It is incredible.
It's unbelievable. It's amazing. Like, there couldn't have been many third downs in that game. Like, how can you so thoroughly, you know, the offense in the SEC is pretty good, Scott, because you're, unlike Miami, your Florida team has an offense that has pros on it. And I know they lost this weekend in Mullen.
But there are pros on that offense.
Well, Pitts is, and Tony is, and they make the quarterback Trask look, he's very competent on his own, but they make him look special.
But Dan Mullen has an adjustment in mind.
This is unbelievable. Did you hear this story?
This Dan Mullen.
I did. It's disgusting, to be honest with you.
He wants a full stadium because the 12th man at Kyle Field was a distinct advantage for the Aggies of Texas A&M. So he's like, look, full stadium at the Swamp. We need that same sort of advantage in our home games. Irresponsible. Your football coach doesn't need to be the one calling for that. Let someone else.
After a loss, how weak does that sound when you were a 15-point favorite in that game, a 2-touchdown favorite?
They weren't a 15-point favorite.
Oh, no, a 5.5-point favorite.
Yeah, they were on the road.
The Aggies were at 25% capacity. Yeah. They weren't even filled that stadium.
Bullshit, by the way.
That was 50% at least capacity. Just quickly on Alabama, they were 6 of 7 on 3-point conversions. on third down conversions.
Also, I'm sure you guys saw what happened at Death Valley, and it was super loud. When they scheduled this, I'm like, okay, at least we got a game at Death Valley, which isn't really like Death Valley. But a lot of college football stadiums do this thing where they think the coronavirus only spreads horizontally as opposed to vertically, because they have everybody in a row, like straight down, top to bottom.
Right. And doesn't seem socially distant. None of it feels safe. Mullen seems irresponsible. Like, doing that after a loss is particularly unseemly because it makes it seem like you're saying that they didn't lose because of you, even though you have a really superior offense. They lost because they had the advantage of crowd noise. And I understand that is an advantage, Dugatz. That's why, as you were saying, they
were on
the— It
doesn't make it right. I mean, just because there's crowd noise doesn't mean that there should be a crowd there. There shouldn't be a crowd at any of these stadiums. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic.
I know you're—
There's a disease that kills people.
That is correct, Dugatz, but you are stating a very political opinion right now, because you do realize you've been paying attention to politics in this country.
I have.
So you know that you're getting emails from Donald Trump saying he saved college football. He's running on the platform of get everything back to normal, get everybody back in the stadiums. And there were a whole lot of people in that stadium watching Dak Prescott get hurt, Stugatz. That stadium, that was galling to me.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones told you he was going to do this, and there were a whole lot of people mortified to see their quarterback go down because they were in that stadium. I had the same feeling at Texas A&M. Didn't feel like 25% to me watching that game. Like, it felt like there were a whole lot of people there.
No, especially on Texas A&M's sideline and in the opposing team's end zone. Like, there were too many people on the sideline. That sideline was packed.
I guess the coronavirus can only be transmitted in the upper deck, because that's where they limit their numbers. But you still have these clusters of people. Kyle Field, the only difference was when they would go on the wide shot and you can see the entire stadium and you'd realize, oh, the upper deck is thinner, I guess.
Did you see the shot in the Jaguars game where they somehow found Gardner Minshew's dad way up in the upper deck? And they had zoomed in. They're like, there's Gardner Minshew's dad. And then they zoomed all the way out very slowly. He was like 5 rows from the top in the upper deck. They're like, I think he could get better seats than that.
Billy, I'm so happy you mentioned that, because I looked at that Texans stadium and Houston's had problems with the coronavirus. And I'm like, that's what 19,000 people should look like in an NFL stadium, not what it looks like at Kyle Field. That's what 19,000 people looks like. So anytime someone tries to tell me 19,000 people at Death Valley, I just refuse to believe it. It doesn't look like it. It looks packed.
Help me as we head into the national show, because we talked before we got in here, and Mike Ryan proclaimed it a terrible idea. I said, what if we were to go into the entire show today and not talk about the finals at all as sort of performance art? And they made the right call, Stu Gatz and Mike did, saying, you know, it's going to be really annoying to our audience. They're not going to think it's funny. Can I now do it just nationally, though? Because now we head into the national show, and can't we use damn Get Up as our yes. launching point for not talking? Now, I don't know what Heat fans – what would Heat fans want nationally? My guess is because we've really enjoyed the last couple of months. The Heat have been a marvelous reprieve from all the crud. Sports has been the kind of escape that you want it to be in trying times for Heat fans. And so – I want to, and we've tried, to serve Heat fans and Miami because of how we care about Miami throughout this national run, because it's been a long time since we had any of these teams being any good. And so we've done that, and we enjoyed the season. What is the funnier, smarter, least annoying way to do this on the national show? Because I think I'd vote right now for seeing if we just don't talk Heat basketball at all and make someone ask us about it, but also don't talk Dak Prescott either.
Well, that's the key. I was going to say, what are you going to replace Heat basketball with?
Danny DeVito.
Now, if you replace it with Greg Gumbel, I'm in. Like, if we're going to do the Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, I think that's a good place to go.
I mean, you're taking Dak off the board, too. It just feels like you've got an axe to grind.
And here's the other thing, Dan. I mean, everyone's talking Dak. No one's talking NBA Finals and LeBron's fourth title.
Yeah,
we could be the home for that.
Look,
you know?
I honestly have my regrets in when we were talking this out. National show, absolutely, you could pull that gag off. I just felt like we had to be there for the South Florida audience because we're appointment listening for South Florida sports fans, and they're not getting that, obviously, when you watch ESPN right now. They're not getting Heat talk anyway.
But I don't know if they want it today, though, because I know after a loss, you guys all turned your televisions off last night. Like I told you, I went to bed at halftime. I didn't fall asleep in front of the television. I chose to go to bed at halftime. You guys watched a lot of the post coverage?
I had trouble sleeping. I watched it, and my mind was racing, and I was happy about the season. This is a weird title loss because every time the Miami Heat have lost a championship, we've had these weighty expectations, right? This is the first time that we were like the crazy underdog story. So I was really reflecting. It sounds so corny. I was reflecting in bed, restless because of what an amazing season and in a time.
And you're sad. You're grieving that it's over.
Because in a time where there wasn't a lot of feel good out there, this team gave me feel good.
I fell asleep also at halftime. I mean, I just learned this morning that Mike Zimmer should have been fired.
Chris, how did you sleep last night? Did you sleep fine? I imagine Billy slept okay. Roy, Tony, I want to know all of you how you slept last night. It'll teach me how much you actually cared about this, I think.
I mean, I slept fine. I didn't lose sleep last night, and I watched some of the post game stuff. I like to sit in it, marinate in my feel bad. I don't know. I slept fine. I like to watch that stuff even when we lose.
Tony.
I slept good knowing that they let Russ cook. I felt sad for Dalvin Cook because he got another injury. I was thinking about Mike Zimmer in that fourth down call. I was thinking of DK Metcalf and how much of a chiseled stone of granite
he is. He's so beautiful.
Is he
the new good at sex more than Michael Thomas?
Michael Thomas has been disciplined. Yes. He's suspended for at least a game from the title holder of looks like he has amazing sex.
I mean, just think about it. How could DK Metcalf be bad at it?
There's just no way.
I was kind of thinking last night in the post game that Dwight Howard can't be bad.
Is that what you were thinking? Is that what you were thinking? I've told you that story before. I want to go to Billy and Roy sleeping as we go around the room on sleep. But I think I've told you the story of Dwight Howard outside the locker room going to see Stan Van Gundy a long time ago when he was the coach of the Magic. I went with my girlfriend, and my girlfriend in the hallway in front of the outside of the locker room, my girlfriend, I had my back to the locker room, and she's looking over my shoulder and smiling. And I'm like, who is she looking at? What just happened?
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
And it's Dwight Howard leaning out of the locker room shirtless. With the frame that he has. And I'm like, what could I have? And this is when he's defensive player of the year. And like, people are talking about him as like, do you take him or LeBron?
It was Superman.
He was Superman. And I'm like, what could I put behind me that would be more intimidating than that? And the answer is DK Metcalf. DK Metcalf right now.
I was starting to think, like, if you're LeBron, it's listen, I know he's married, but it's impossible to live up to the expectations that one would have for LeBron in the bedroom, right?
I mean, he's lived up to all the other expectations.
This is an amazing conversation. Not the one. Let's collect your thoughts on that, and I'll come back to you, Stugatz.
I'm with Stugatz, though. He can't be better in bed than he is on the basketball court.
None of us can be better at anything than he is at basketball. What are you talking about? There is absolutely nothing that any of us can be better at than he is at basketball. Billy, how did you sleep last night?
I couldn't go to sleep, Dan. I was having so much fun going through like the IG lives that Dion Waiters was doing, celebrating where he was announcing to everyone he's no longer Philly cheese. He's no longer big cheese. Now he's just champ cheese. And he'd go up. He somehow ended up with the trophy in the locker room. He had that. He had a cigar. He was drinking his Michelob Ultra or whatever it is that they were drinking. He got LeBron in his IG live, Anthony Davis. I was surprised that they honestly knew that he was on the team, but they all seemed to know who he was and they seemed to like him, and he was so happy.
Billy had the tweet of the night for me. It was like a half hour or something after the game. I just saw on Twitter, just nothing but an asterisk. And I was just like, oh, it's so good.
You're still up, huh?
And so you were up late, but you weren't bitter. You were happy that your guy Dion Waiters finally gets a championship.
Well, it was funny. I was just laughing because I went down. Everybody knew how that game was going to end, right? So, like, with 6 minutes left, I went down. I took my dog to do his business, and I came up, and I was like, wow, the game ended already. It was pretty quick. And I was surprised it was only 13 that they lost by. So I just see, like, the post-game celebration. They have, like, the hats on, the shirts on, and it's, like, when the trophies are being presented and they're doing the interviews and all that stuff, like, on the court. And then I'm just looking. I'm like, man, where's Dion? And then Dion is just kind of sneaking his way into the middle of all the pictures. He kept getting behind the MVP. He kept getting behind kind of whoever was being interviewed. He was front and center for all of it. And no one was really saying it. They just embraced him like, yeah, Dion, congrats, man. You're a champion now. But he was loving it. Like, he was acting like he was one of the key pieces to this championship run. It was amazing. I loved it.
J.R. Smith, now a two-time champion. J.R. Smith. Roy, how did you sleep last night? Fine?
Oh, I slept like a baby because I didn't see a single second of the NBA Finals or the Miami Hurricanes game because my cable provider decided that, you know what? Roy doesn't need cable or internet this weekend.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Oh, no.
What a bad weekend.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, Roy. This is worse than the Dak Prescott injury.
You really didn't miss much, though.
Apparently not.
You know, one thing that's going unnoticed that Chris pointed out earlier, and it's something that would happen to James Jones also, right? So when LeBron went to Cleveland and he went to 5 straight finals or 6 straight finals or whatever, they're like, this is the first person in NBA history to go to 6 straight NBA finals or whatever it was, right? And it's like, well, James Jones was with him for all of these. So James Jones also did that. So it's not that LeBron was the first one because someone else did it at the same time. So yes, there was a whole thing. LeBron James is the first person to win a championship with 3 different franchises. Well, Danny Green also did that yesterday because he did it with the Spurs and the Raptors, and now he's done it with the Lakers. So history will be telling you LeBron James, the only person, the first person. But time works the same for Danny Green as it does for LeBron James, right? So they did it at the exact same time. They're both the first person, I guess, technically, to win a championship with 3 franchises, right?
Guillermo, go ahead and put that on the poll, and you will see how poorly your result does. Does time work the same for Danny Green and LeBron James?
I'm voting no.
I think 4 players did it. Robert Horry did it with 3 teams. He did it with the Spurs, Lakers, and first with the Rockets. Danny Green with the Raptors last year. Obviously the Lakers and then the Spurs. LeBron, and there's one other person. I saw the graphic, and it's funny. LeBron James was on the graphic that they put, but the picture that they chose was Danny Green.
What was this lie then? They were making this big deal. Was he the first to win like the MVP of all the teams or something?
I guess that.
It was time working differently for him than it does for anybody. Yeah. Chris, I want your, because it sounds like Billy was looking for the funny to cheer himself up after the game. And it sounds like you were looking for both the feel bad and the bitterness, because it seems to me like you are a little pettier today than Billy is. Billy's mood is not despondent about this. You're ripping Frank Vogel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not petty. Like, they won. Good for them. Now bite me.
I mean, Vogel was a first. I mean, that's in terms of, I mean, that's why he did the whole, like, you know, he did it for the fans and did some of the stuff he wanted the players to do. He was the first guy to do it, and there was no sound, no fans cheering. And Vogel just felt the need. It was so awkward. He felt the need to scream something because no one was making a big deal about it.
Yeah, Vogel was the guinea pig for the coach speech thanking the fans at a championship celebration with no fans, and it went poorly. But I did enjoy Rob Pelinka being there to support him, because Vogel needed some support considering that he put himself out there on the island. Yes. Pelinka was there for him, left hanging, and Pelinka just goes, oh, let me check my watch instead. No high five.
That's what made it so awkward is that none of the players are like paying attention to what's being said because they're all just celebrating. And he's like, how about this team? And nobody's listening to him. We get it. It's just like, Vogel, tone it down. We get it. You're excited. But did you guys hear when the like championship first was won and it was like that awkward time where Stugatz is talking about where it's like, does this feel like a championship? The confetti started falling, and since it was like not a normal arena, you could hear the confetti machine. It was like this like big air conditioning thing.
You would just like, fart out a couple.
Everyone was confused. A Louis Vuitton suitcase. I mean, Adam Silver didn't know if the winner gets to take it home with him.
Yeah, J.R. Smith is there lining
He's eyeing
up
it.
To hand it over. The whole thing was a little awkward.
Wait a minute. You have now turned J.R. Smith into a thief? You've got him stealing a Louis Vuitton bag?
I'm telling you, the trophy was in the Louis Vuitton case, and the thing that J.R. Smith was eyeing and wanted was the case, not the trophy.
Chris,
a nice case. I mean,
I am laughing at the idea, Chris, that you, the reason you're totally right about this. The reason Vogel was off-putting to you is specifically because he was trying to summon the charisma of a coach at the height of championship celebration while surrounded by 20 to 30,000 people he's made happy. So he was like, you basically hired Frank Vogel to be your highest paid Disney actor to convey enthusiasm and charisma about winning a championship like Ben Affleck in the Way Back movie.
Right, but he didn't have the 30,000 fans. He only had 20 players.
And he's Frank Vogel!
Well, and not only that, he only had a bunch of players. He knew the only reason they won was because of LeBron.
That's it. It's Frank Vogel looking at Dion Waiters and he's like, what's my motivation? What do I do? What do you guys need me to do here as we in the happiest place on earth try to recreate what a real championship that didn't have an asterisk would feel like?
I'm envious of how well everybody slept. You guys slept well. I checked Bradley Beal's Twitter account at 2 a.m. and even he was talking about Dak Prescott.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.